The dying man's words made little sense to Bearheart. With his final strained breaths, the man had whispered to Bearheart about secrets and danger in the white man's god. Bearheart thought there was also something about Croatoan. Of course, he might have misunderstood some of what the man had said. His English was good, but not perfect. Of this much he was certain. The dying man wanted the information on this piece of paper kept safe. Safe from whom, he had not said. How it should be done was also a mystery. I dreaded the thought of an unfinished life. What was more, it had been too long since I'd trudged up mountains in Nepal, snorkeled with fairy penguins in the Galapagos, driven a dog sled in the Yukon, or ridden horseback with a herdsman to his village in Mongolia. My train travels, which had happily included the hardships of the Trans-Siberian Railway, were now as easy as a recent smooth Amtrak ride from New York to San Francisco. Yet I was convinced that in one's rocking chair years, travels will count as much as friends, only a little less than family, and much more than money. "Hold on," Johnny said before turning to the bartender. "Jerry, I'll have another hams, and my friend here will have a Miller." "Johnny," Jerry replied, "I can get you a hams, but I can't serve your friend." "Jerry," Johnny repeated slowly, "I'll have another hams, and my friend here will have a Miller." "Mr. Johnny," Bullet interrupted, "I came here to see you, not to cause trouble." "I'm not here to cause trouble, Mr. Johnny." Johnny turned to look hard into his friend's eyes. "Well, I am. It's damn time I caused some goddamn trouble."
It was here, inside the tarnished imagination of the former child actor who refused to grow up and leave the stage, that Ito and Tyndall believed they finally found their killer. On April 18, 2002, the detectives concluded that the brooding screen persona that little rascal Bobby Blake nurtured into a lead role in the big screen adaptation of Truman Capote's In Cold Blood and continued to cultivate for half a Hollywood century finally crossed over from tough guy fantasy to killer reality.
"So why the cellar of the hotel?" Sterno asked.
"This is Dad's favorite place to relax, with all these dates and names. Crazy old curmudgeon, down here in the dark organizing and reorganizing and yelling up at my girls to be quiet. The records are safe down here. Maybe he felt safe, too. Up until just a couple years ago, the old Blue Mare, as Dad calls her, was the only brick structure in town. There was an old red brick church for a long while, a Catholic church, but that was out by the river. Then it burned down in 15.
"Another fire."
"Yes. Geez, I never really thought about it, but I guess, you know, it was a little prairie fire that took the church up and started out of nowhere, right next to the church."
"Maybe God is a Lutheran after all."
"I'm glad they're gone. There's a lot to think about. It's good the kid didn't delve into the books. If he had poked around, he would have discovered the truth. I'm bankrupt. But there's plenty of time for that later. The kid will learn soon enough. I wonder, if I'd laid off gambling after getting caught throwing that game in Texas, would anything have been different? I wouldn't have experienced the thrills I had when a winner came in, that's for sure, even though it was tough on Sally and the kid when I lost. But most of the losses weren't my fault. It was the damn depression. And how was I to know Sally would go blind? Sure, the gambling hurt Sally, and I didn't want that. But I won the big one with the kid. That's my real success. That was the big parlay I hit. Oh, that damn chest pain is starting again."